Join us as we journey into the heart of Africa.
As we explore the expectations of the masses against a backdrop of
war,
war.
Good governance is vital.
Social political change inevitable.
The struggle continues.
How do we face the challenge?
On Channel Africa, every week, we are joined by experts, political analysts and correspondents who will help answer these and many other questions.
Tantum Express on Channel Africa.
An African Odyssey. The United Nations-sponsored talks over the disputed Western Sahara took place in New York recently. Known as Africa's forgotten conflict, for the past 32 years, no mutually acceptable solution has been found. To this day, Western Sahara retains the title of Africa's lost colony. Why should Western Sahara get its independence?
We are victims not of a colonial power coming from Europe. It's the first time that in Africa, the colonialism came from within. And that is the tragedy here.
Welcome to this edition of Tamtam Express as we bring you an insight into what went on during that meeting held behind closed doors. I'm Fazila Dahal. Assisting me on the technical side is Steve Kirker. Hailed as groundbreaking talks because Morocco and the Polisario Front have never sat down for such major negotiations, which included several other countries. But how could the two-day talks produce a breakthrough to a crisis that has lasted more than 30 years? It must be remembered that Morocco annexed Western Sahara in 1975, citing centuries-old land rights. For the Polisario Front, which is backed by Algeria, the only way out of this impasse is full independence. Today, there is international pressure on both of them to resolve the problem, which is hindering cooperation in North Africa in terms of trade and other issues, such as combating terrorism. Tamtam Express on Channel Africa, the show that takes you places. Before we cross over to New York and Brazil to walk you through the corridors of negotiations, let us backtrack. The United Nations International Court of Justice ruled in 1975 that Morocco's claims, and I quote, do not establish any tie of territorial sovereignty between the territory of Western Sahara and the Kingdom of Morocco. It further stated that the court had not found legal ties of such a nature as might affect the application of the principle of self-determination through the free and genuine expression of the will of the peoples of the territory. Why then does Morocco continue to occupy Western Sahara? Why is it so hard to find a solution? Is a breakthrough in the making?
We never thought that the colonialism in Africa was also not as coming from Europe, but from within Africa.
That's next on Tamtam Express.
Tamtam Express on Channel Africa.
A journey into the known and the unknown.
Tamtam Express on Channel Africa.
A journey of discovery.
A journey into the known and the unknown.
Tamtam Express explores the realities,
the aspirations,
the mysteries, the dreams of a complex continent.
Tamtam Express on Channel Africa.
Every week on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
Tamtam Express.
Joining us on the line from New York, Mr. Ahmed Bukhari, the Sahrawi's representative at the United Nations. Mr. Bukhari, thank you for joining us on Tamtam Express.
Thank you for having me.
After so much hostility in the past, the two parties sat down at the same table. How was the atmosphere?
Yeah, that room only were Morocco delegation and Polisario delegation and United Nations represented by Mr. Peter Van Warsum, the new personal envoy of the Secretary General. The atmosphere was tense in the first 5 minutes, but gradually it was leading to a calm and serene climate. And we engaged in discussion and in negotiation in what can be said that it was finally a good political atmosphere.
The Green Tree Estate in Manhasset on Long Island was in fact used by the UN for other negotiations. For example, the one between Nigeria and Cameroon, which eventually proved successful. How optimistic was the Polisario Front when it went into that meeting?
It was the first round in what I can see in a very difficult process to persuade Morocco that it should have been already done, this referendum on self-determination, which has been from the day one of its occupation, illegal occupation of Western Sahara, has been long-standing request from the international community. Now, when we went into the room and discuss and see face-to-face the Moroccan delegation, the past colonial souvenir of Africa, the darkest night in the history of our continent, was unfortunately having in Morocco delegation dramatic representation. It was something which we were like in a movie. We never thought that the colonialism in Africa was also not as coming from Europe, but from within Africa. And we were engaged in negotiation with a country which was, during the 20s and the 30s, was under French occupation. And now we were trying to persuade that country that it should respect our right to freedom and self-determination. It was a painful diplomatic and political exercise. But in any way, we are not excessively optimist on quick result on this negotiation, but at least we had this first meeting, and we will continue, and we will be engaged in looking with our neighbor, Morocco, a peaceful result and a peaceful solution based on the respect of our right to freedom and self-determination. We will see what is going to be Morocco behavior in the next round, which is scheduled for August 11.
Mr. Bukhari, what did the two parties, meaning Morocco and the Polisario Front, bring to the table? Has Morocco changed its position?
You know, we were invited by the Security Council in its resolution 1754, both parties to engage in direct negotiation to reach a political solution which will provide for the right to self-determination of the people of Western Sahara. The Security Council also took note that there is two proposals to reach that end. One presented by Morocco, and the second was presented by Polisario. Moroccan proposal is to say that from the outset that Western Sahara belongs to Morocco, and Morocco is only ready to engage in conversation leading to grant autonomy to Western Sahara, somehow that it was the Bantustan strategy. We say that the option of autonomy should be only one among other options for the referendum, including the option of independence. The tragedy here is that Morocco has accepted in 1991 a peace plan endorsed by the Security Council and reaffirmed that commitment with James Baker in 1997 to allow United Nations to organize the referendum with the two options. But finally, with the new regime, they changed their position and saying from 2004 on that they will never accept self-determination leading to independence. Our position is to say that be serious, be realistic. The referendum is the unique way to settle a question of decolonization. We can accept your proposal of autonomy, but among other options, including independence, and we should go and to facilitate people of Western Sahara the way and the moment and the political atmosphere to make that free choice. One man, one vote. And let the people of Western Sahara to take that strategic and substantial decision. They are, and they said that in the negotiation, that they don't believe in the referendum of self-determination because for them, Western Sahara belongs to Morocco. And that is not true.
East Timor got its independence because a united world community saw to it that justice was brought to the long-suffering Timorese. But why the same is not applicable to Western Sahara? Why the double standard?
I think we should remember the historical experience and with our brothers, the people of South Africa. The international community, except two or three countries, but which they have some political power in the international decision-making process. And in this case, had the French taken another position, from the day one of the conflict, which started in 1975, maybe I can say that the even the conflict could have not taken place, or at least the referendum on self-determination should have been organized in 1992. But unfortunately, the linkage between Morocco and France, and in somehow during some years, of the Cold War era, the support of Washington. That the two main factors impeded the international community position to be implemented. We are still in the remaining of that kind of substantial support to Morocco attempt to go against international legality. Then it's not the international community, in legally speaking. There is two or three countries that are impeding that the will of international community be respected by Morocco, and instead of engaging or encouraging Morocco to abide by international law, as they did it during the apartheid, they are trying to encourage Morocco to the opposite. That's why you are right when you can speak on double standard. That's why the main reason why our people have suffered a lot of because of two or three countries. They have colonial interest or they have economical links with a regime, in this case Morocco, and they are still obstructing the will of international community as well as the will of people of West Sahara. Then it is a tragedy, a long tragedy, but the main point here is adding another dramatic element. We are victim not of a colonial power coming from Europe. It's the first time that in Africa the colonialism came from within. And that is the tragedy here.
Next on TamTam Express.
If Morocco continue closing the doors, that means they are opening the doors to war.
We are discussing the recent talks brokered by the United Nations over the disputed African region of Western Sahara. Our guest is Mr. Ahmed Bukhari, Sahrawi's representative at the United Nations. Mr. Bukhari, it is a known fact that the Polisario Front will consider nothing less than full independence. Is this the fundamental stumbling block to the problem?
We never change our position. And we never change our mind. We are engaged in a historical struggle of liberation. And we started in a very difficult situation, in historical circumstances, our struggle of liberation against the Spanish colonization in 73. We have expected that our neighbor, Morocco, Mauritania, and Algeria, to help us in getting rid of this colonialism, except Algeria, which is a really a very credible country with regard to their attachment to self-determination. We were in somehow betrayed by Morocco and Mauritania. Remember that both parties engaged in a joint invasion to Western Sahara. They have divided our country. They have divided our population, and they try to impose the annexation of our country as a fait accompli. Even the physical circumstances is a desert. We have suffered a lot, but we can never forget that we should have received help instead of betrayal from our neighbor. We are a nation, we are a people, we have our history, and we have a right to be a free nation as any big or small country in the world. If that is going, a principle is going to be impeded by economical or strategic or historical consideration, then who has the right to be a free nation here? China? United States? Or Luxembourg, Andorra, Liechtenstein, Kuwait? Is any nation, any people? This has been included in the United Nations Charter. All people have the right to self-determination, mainly those which are under foreign and colonial occupation. Then we are a nation, we are a people, and we deserve, as any other nation or people, to become, in our historical development, a free nation and to take in our hands our destiny and our development. That is a basic principle. It is the first right in the list of human rights accepted by international community. And we should not be the exception to the general rule.
Why, in your opinion, Morocco does not want to let go of Western Sahara? Who has got his back against the wall in this equation?
We are not against having good cooperation with Morocco and Mauritania at that time. We can share what we have, even oil, but under the condition that they should get out our oil by economical relationship, not by eliminating our existence and eliminating from the map our state. Yes, we are not alone in the battle. We have a lot of friends in Africa, from South Africa to Algeria. We are full member of African Union. We have a full diplomatic relation with more than 80 countries. No country in the world has recognized Morocco's sovereignty over Western Sahara. And we are ready to engage in the military battle if that is going to be the case. Our people in Laayoune are really following heroic struggle engaged by your people in Soweto. That there was a lot of Soweto in Western Sahara. Our population is under a heavy pressure. A human rights violations are being the daily policy of Morocco. Even if this is not in the mass media, we know that it's very difficult for the Western Sahara people to get his freedom, its freedom. But we will not make a return. We are not ready to make any change on our historical objective is to get our freedom.
If no solution can be reached, Mr. Boukari, will the Polisario Front take up arms?
We are ready to continue to hope that negotiation and dialogue will bring peace between us and Morocco. We have really been been demonstrating our political will to let the peaceful way open. And we did it by cooperating with the United Nations, by making even concessions. But there is a red line. We will never accept that our destiny be determined by Morocco. We will never accept that a colonial power or a illegal power to determine our right to die or to live. If at the end Morocco will continue its obstruction of international legality and impeding our people to get its freedom, and there is no substantial or meaningful reaction from international community, then that the message is that we will not have any other choice than to reconsider the total situation from all its aspects, not only political, not only diplomatic, but even in the military field. We hope that we will never be pushed to that extreme. But in any case, if Morocco continue closing the door, that means they are opening the door to war.
The Sahrawis have been living in camps for over 3 decades. For how long can they sustain such harsh conditions?
You know, Spain to get back Grenada in 1492, that took for them 700 years. I am not saying that we are going to wait for and fight during the next 700 years.
Mr. Ahmed Boukari, thank you for joining us on Tamtam Express. You are the Sahrawi representative at the United Nations, talking to us from New York.
Thank you for having me.
Tamtam Express on Channel Africa.
A journey into the known and the unknown.
Tamtam Express on Channel Africa.
A journey of discovery.
A journey into the known and the unknown.
Tamtam Express explores the realities,
the aspirations,
the mysteries, the dreams of a complex continent.
Tamtam Express on Channel Africa.
Every week on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
Tamtam Express.
Ronny Hansen is a Norwegian human rights campaigner and political lobbyist. He works as advocacy advisor for the Norwegian Refugee Council, the world's largest refugee-focused NGO. He has visited the Sahrawi refugee camps in Algeria many times. He worked as an advisor on landmines issues in the camps, and he has also visited the occupied areas of Western Sahara. He has on several occasions addressed the United Nations Human Rights Council and Decolonization Committee on the issue of the occupation of Western Sahara. He now joins us on the line from Brasilia. Mr. Ronny Hansen, thank you for your time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Mr. Hansen, Western Sahara is one of only a few nations in the world that remains dominated by a foreign state. The United Nations International Court of Justice ruling has been baffled. Over 3 decades later, no solution. What do you make of the latest round of talks? What are the chances of Morocco and the Polisario Front in overcoming the impasse? What is the stumbling block?
Well, I would hate to be pessimistic, but I am. I think the chances are slim. And the reasons for that, I could enumerate many, but I think that what we see now is that there's a new round of negotiations now, 16 years after the initial agreement in 1991, which was also the culmination of a very long process and of the parties, and especially the Sahrawis, giving enormous concessions. But at that time, the agreement was based on international law, meaning that the Sahrawis would have the right to self-determination through a referendum. And so far, so good. But now what we're seeing is that it's actually a reversal of that whole 16-year-long process, where now the Moroccans are more adamant than ever that they don't intend to follow international law and previously signed agreements, and they're trying to push through an acceptance of the status quo. Since I can't discern any movement on the Moroccan side I think that's that basic stumbling block.
If that's the case, from your perspective, why bother then to even engage in useless talks?
Well, there are several reasons. First of all, there is a certain international pressure on both parties to get some kind of solution to this problem. The UN and the international community is tired of waiting and spending enormous amounts of money and other resources on the UN mission there, the MINURSO. And also, of course, the pressure has to do with several things. There's the international terrorism problem, where many Western powers, foremost, I believe, the Americans, want to have greater stability in the region. They want to have stronger states being able to operate in this region that can help them fight terrorism or terrorist groups in the region. And also, of course, economic integration in the region. This conflict over Western Sahara is hindering regional cooperation and integration. So, of course, many are interested in a solution and are putting pressure on the parties. The second one is, to respond directly to your question, is that none of the parties want to be seen as the one stopping the talks. None of them can really say no to meeting, and they haven't, but they have very little to give. And from my perspective, the ones who have the least to give are the Sahrawis. They are with the back against the wall in many respects. They are inside their own country, marginalized and oppressed. The other half of the population or more are refugees in Algeria still after 32 years, and they have given so many concessions over these years that they have only one thing left that they can give to the Moroccans, and that would be to give up the fight, to give up their struggle, which is a legitimate one. And so, so of course, from the Sahrawi side, the way I know them, they are always open to meet, to discuss and to negotiate under the aegis of the United Nations, but they have very little to give, and the world needs to understand that. The Moroccans, on the other side, have become even more intransigent than they have been for the last 16 years, insisting that they will not honor previous agreements, that they will not follow international law, but try to impose some kind of autonomy in Western Sahara, which means that the territory will be Moroccan, but given some kind of status of autonomy. That means that the two parties really don't meet at the most important point, which is independence or integration with Morocco.
It is a known fact that the Polisario Front will consider nothing less than full independence.
I would put it this way. Well, yes, but the point that they're making the whole time is that allow the Sahrawi people to exercise its right to self-determination through a referendum. What the Sahrawi people decides is completely up to them, and Polisario has said it many times from the very beginning and are still doing it, that we will honor any result of such a consultation, of such a referendum. And in the last proposal that they put forward on the 10th of April, made one more concession, which would be, I believe, one of the last. They opened up for the possibility that the Moroccan autonomy proposal could be an option in the referendum, that there could be three options instead of two as in the past. It could be independence, full integration, or autonomy. And what they're saying is simply just do what we have been doing in the rest of Africa and around the world when decolonizing countries. Allow the people to exercise the right to self-determination for them to decide for themselves.
Just like it was the case in East Timor.
Yes, or Namibia. And East Timor, of course, is a very good example because, for many reasons, the countries are similar. Are being occupied by a regional big power and so on, with support from the superpowers. There are very many similarities, except that for one thing, that Western Sahara has an even stronger case for self-determination than East Timor had. East Timor had a very, very strong case, and of course they reached independence for many reasons, but Western Sahara is an even stronger case because of the many rulings of the United Nations and of the International Court of Justice that you mentioned yourself.
If the international community could unite to free East Timor, why can't they do the same for Western Sahara?
Well, it's all a very cynical game, you know. In fact, I would say that also one having worked a lot with East Timor, and I was also there during the referendum in 1999, I would say that the Timorese had to carry the burden themselves the whole time. Timorese, with the support of a relatively small but very active international solidarity movement, and in the last few years with support from Portugal, which reassumed its historical responsibility, the Timorese owe very little to the international community in that sense. Because the world was very well prepared to forget about East Timor, and also activists like myself were told by government and others around the world for many years before their liberation that, listen, this is a lost case, lost cause. The Indonesians are so strong and so powerful and have so strong and powerful friends that East Timor will never be independent. And we said, well, we'll see. And of course, we were proven right with the Sahrawis. I'm afraid that it's very much the same situation. Of course, Algeria supports the Sahrawis, and now also, luckily, South Africa, which has a fantastic position on Western Sahara, I must say. A few few countries do support the Sahrawis, and there is an international solidarity movement, but the major powers in this context, the Americans, the French, and the Spanish, are not prepared to put pressure on Morocco to honor their agreements and honor international law. And until that happens, the Sahrawis and the solidarity movement and the few countries that support them will have to be very creative in the ways that we work, meaning that it will have to be it's an asymmetrical warfare situation, if you like, where the Sahrawis and those working with them will have to find the weakest spot of the adversary of the Moroccans and attack them on that. And as one can see from international media, the Sahrawis, and we also with them, are focusing a lot on the human rights situation in the occupied territories. We are working a lot on the natural resources issue, where we can very easily point out that Morocco is illegally exploiting the natural resources of Western Sahara very actively and very illegally, according to international law.
Why, in your opinion, Morocco does not want to let go of Western Sahara? Could phosphates, fishing, or oil be the reasons?
Well, yes, those are very, very central reasons. But of course, yes, natural resources is a very central reason. Another one is that in 1975, when the invasion happened, the Moroccan king, Hassan II, was very unpopular. He had several coup attempts against him, of which one or two were nearly successful, almost managed to topple him. And he needed to get the army out of the country, just get them out, get them preoccupied with something else. And there was Western Sahara just next door. So we sent the army, and still some 80 to 90% of the Moroccan army are outside the country in Western Sahara. And also that reason still exists to some extent. And also the fact that Morocco is a poor country with low development indicators, with lots of corruption, a lot of frustration in the population. You can see Islamism growing in the country as one of the indications of the state of things in Morocco. And they need to have something external to gather popular support on, so to speak, to distract the people's attention from what they would really need to look at, which is the authoritarian and undemocratic rule in Morocco and the corruption and all that. And instead, they focus on Western Sahara and the world's pressure on Morocco regarding Western Sahara. And it rallies Moroccans around the king and the throne because of this feeling of an external threat of the Polisario and the Algerians and South Africans and so on. I wouldn't be able to weigh those reasons against each other, but I think they are of great importance, both of them.
These are valid reasons. There has been an escalation in pro-independence demonstrations in recent weeks in Morocco. What is your reading of this?
Oh, this is a very interesting development indeed. I would like to make the reference to East Timor. You saw for the last year or two before East Timor's independence, you would see that, because I'm drawing a parallel here now, Timorese students, like the Sahrawi students, who were either forcibly deported or lured to the cities of the occupier, namely Indonesia and Morocco. The Timorese showed over the years that instead of becoming more Indonesian, as the Indonesians wanted them to be, and that's part of the political process of maintaining the occupation, they became more Timorese. They became more aware of their Timorese identity and all that goes with it. And so they were at the forefront of the demonstrations in Indonesia, which in turn led to the liberation of East Timor. The same thing is happening now with Western Sahara. We've seen that development over a number of years, where Sahrawi students at Moroccan universities have shown a tendency to become more and more Sahrawi in their thinking, in their activism. They have dared to organize sit-ins and demonstrations and so on at those universities. And it's a sign that the Moroccan project of trying to make them think as Moroccans and act as Moroccans and feel loyalty to Morocco has failed. The Moroccan authorities have reacted with extreme brutality in retaliating against these students. But it's very worrying to see that they have stepped up the oppression and the use of violence against them now, just before these negotiations were to start. It's baffled me and many others to see that.
Ronny Hansen is a Norwegian human rights campaigner and political lobbyist. Mr. Hansen, thank you for joining us on TamTam Express.
Thank you.
We welcome your views, comments, and suggestions. You can contact us by phone, fax, or email. Check our website for details at www.channelafrica.org, or you can write directly to the producer, TamTam Express, at channelafrica.org. I'm Fazila Dahal. Join me next week, same time, same place, on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. Till then, goodbye.